Right, well, I'll start this FAQ session. This is a slightly controversial one, this one. While there are more women in the party, this has been something discussed in the party over the last couple of years. Now, it's quite clear that... right, great. So anyway, as I was saying, so we have an anomalous situation in the party. Now, we're totally opposed to all forms of discrimination in our own party, and yet we've ended up with a ratio of women to men of about 1 to 9. I say ended up, but it's probably been similar throughout the life of the party. Now, it's hard to argue with that statistic. There is something funny going on. In debates in the last couple of years, some members have not argued with the statistic, but have, however, argued that the statistic is not important, that what we want is members, regardless of who they are, what sex they are, what race they are, what ethnic background they are, etc. I can't help suspecting that if the ratio was 9 women to 1 man in the party, then you would have some male members who would be loudly demanding to know what was going on and why this virtually all-female party was putting men off and then demanding that the party did something about it. Well, imagine if we said, okay, let's just ignore the problem. We're struggling to get any workers at the moment, so... okay, if we only appeal to male workers, then so be it. Let's just get on with that, seeing as most male workers don't join us either. Well, imagine if we succeeded at that strategy beyond our wildest dreams of attracting men into the party. The fact is, we could only ever get 50% of the workers of the world signed up to the idea of revolution. And we can't get a revolution with only 50%. We need a majority. In fact, we need a vast majority. So we need the women. Without the women, socialism is just not going to happen. So ignoring the problem now or at any point in the future is not the solution. Now, it seems to me that something, what obviously must be happening is we're not doing this on purpose. Nobody's deliberately discriminating. What must be happening is that the disparity between women and men is somehow self-sustaining. Women don't join the party because they can see that there aren't many women in the party. So they don't, well, they wouldn't feel at home. The only solution in this case to a passively self-perpetuating disparity is some kind of active intervention in the form of positive discrimination. But here's the rub, because we've always said we totally oppose discrimination. We make no distinctions between workers, so that appears to rule out positive discrimination. In other words, our own case returns us back to where we started, with a disparity that won't go away. So what are we going to do? Well, we now have an ad hoc committee looking into this, and that committee has made some minor suggestions to the EC, some of which were taken up. This FAQ session is one of the things the committee proposed. Now, nobody expects any flashes of brilliant insight into this problem, and it's an intractable dilemma. But the answer is going to be lots of little things. But one little thing that is especially important is to flag this as an issue and keep it on the party's radar and keep it in members' minds for the future. So with that in mind, who would like to offer a thought to start us off today?
Okay, Paddy, I'll say a word or two. Is that okay?
Of course.
Okay. I've done a little bit of statistical work here, which sort of backs up what the kind of thing you've just said. Being on the Membership Applications Committee, I've got a record of all the applications made online to join the party since 2013. Applications in recent years have been online as well, rather than through branches. There are a small number through branches, but vast majority online. I've had a look at those. It would be an enormously big job for me to actually work out how many men and how many women had applied, because the way I've been recording them, perhaps wrongly, the way I've been listing them for my own records is simply by surname. I don't know whether they're male or female. I'd have to look back at every single application individually. You might think that might not take long, but there have been a fair number, well, I don't know, it depends on the way you look at it, a fair number of applications. Between 2013 and 2019, we had 433 applications to join. A vast majority did not end up joining for one reason or another. In fact, of the 433 applications during that period, 145 were accepted for party membership. And of the 145, I've managed to sort of work out fairly accurately, I think, that 15 of them were women. Not been able to work out how many of the actual 150 applications were women. Too big a job. But of the 145 accepted, 15 were women. So you're right, it's about 10%, isn't it? Round about 10. So you were sort of pretty accurate there, Paddy. I think you said 9% or something. And similarly, the other statistic I've got is that between 2013 and 2016, of the 182 people who applied but didn't end up joining, 14 of those were women. So again, it's a bit lower than 10% on this occasion, but we can see sort of approximate situation is. So yeah, statistically, what you said is correct. It's backed up by, you know, by actual figures. But I wonder, but the other thing you said is that it's no doubt been like this sort of since, you know, more or less throughout the history of the party. Not so sure about that. Take a bit of work for somebody to sort of do figures on how many women were members in the 70s, 80s, 90s and so on. But it's difficult for people who are in the party during that period not to have some kind of impression. And my impression is that, and you know, other people will say different things if they want to, that in the 70s, for example, there was a far higher proportion of women in the party. A lot of them tended to be sort of, you know, there were a lot of man and wife teams. So a lot were sort of, you know, from that area. In the 80s, however, I see that as a sort of golden age of women being in the party, because my memory is, perhaps it's a, I don't know, an optimistic or romantic memory or something, but my memory is that there was a significant number of, shall we say, younger women who were enthusiastic party members. That's certainly my memory. Now, the question is, if that's true, and I sort of broadly think it is, why was that the case? My take on it was that somehow the party was a more attractive, presented itself as a more attractive organization to be part of. A lot more activity, a lot more speaking, a lot more meetings. Work today or not, it's a different matter, because on the whole, people are much less likely to go to meetings. But that's my take on it. Somehow, the party during that period managed to present itself as a more attractive organisation to women as well as to men than it does now. Me for the time, but for the moment, anyway.
Howard, do you have any thoughts on why those women, and you're quite right, the 80s was, there was a lot more women, I remember that. Do you have any idea of why these women might still not be members or still not be active? Any ideas on that?
Well, I think a lot of them just aren't members anymore. Well, I can immediately think of a good number who ended up sort of drifting away. Don't know why. No, I don't really know why. find it hard to answer the question. I've got Joy with me here, who's saying they've got too much to do. Did they have sort of less to do then? I'm not sure. Sorry, that's not a very good answer, I know, but that's all I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah.
What does Joy mean? What does Joy mean they've got too much to do?
Oh, yeah, yes,
Joy, where is she?
I'm here, I don't know if you can hear me. I'll just go a bit closer. I suppose what I mean is that if one joins with the initial fervour, and then you may as a woman find that you just can't give it the time that you'd like because of all your other commitments. I mean, I'm not making this plea for do all the work, but frankly, you know, quite a lot of us end up doing twofold, you know, one outside the house and one in the house.
Fair comment.
Yeah, I remember seeing a poster around in the 80s that said, it was a picture of a woman and it said, I wanted to go out and change the world, but I couldn't get a babysitter. We kind of assume that times have changed. In the 80s, when I first joined the party, there were 7 women in my branch and 2 men.
Which suggests that it's not always been like it is now.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? We're not doing anything different, or at least we're not aware that we're doing anything different now from we were then. I mean, you mentioned the 80s. There were just generally a lot more younger people in the party in the 80s, it seems to me. And, you know, we know, don't we, that we're an ageing party by and large. So maybe the question of women is also related to the question of why we're not appealing to young people.
Yeah, definitely a lot more younger people, yeah, definitely.
One of the reasons we're not appealing to more young people is because there is things like Extinction Rebellion and Black Lives Matter, and you know they seem to be a lot more. I hate to use the word that I used before to Howard, but they're sort of sexier movements.
But weren't these around in the 80s?
Not in the same way, no.
There were similar things, though. There was Reclaim the Streets. I remember. And road protests, they were quite big.
Yeah.
It did seem to me that as well in the 80s, there just seemed more things going on. There seemed more of a social life in the party. There were more things to do. Up in the Northwest, we were all accused of just doing drugs all the time, and it wasn't true. But we did have quite a lot of fun, and we used to have parties and things like that. And that also seemed to disappear, and the party became rather, in the 2000s, it just seemed to become rather dull by comparison to the 80s.
I think something it would be useful to know, but even harder to find out, is why people leave the party, and also whether there's any significant difference between the reasons why men leave and the reasons why women leave.
I think there are at least 4 women here this afternoon, and I'm just wondering if any one of them would like to give us their first impressions of the party as a woman joining the party.
Hi, this is Janet. And yeah, I laugh when I recall my first meeting with the party. Most of you know, I think, that I don't live in the country, and I didn't live in the country when I found the party. When I did find the party, it was through a small ad somewhere, Private Eye maybe, and I letter sent for all the info that I could get, and I absolutely devoured it and loved it and wrote for more, which took far too long, you know. I was very excited. I couldn't believe what I was reading. And then I can't remember how soon afterwards, but I came over for the summer school, And this is the bit I laugh, and I hope you'll laugh too, because I walked into Firkroft, and the common room seemed to me, I mean, I must have been 60 or ever so close then. Oh, more, less, actually, sorry, 55, I can't remember, 50, yeah, 55 maybe. And I walked in, and common room sort of, I thought I'd gone into an old folks' home. All men, and nobody said hello. And I was really quite taken aback. Now, luckily, I survived that moment. I've been back many times and thoroughly enjoyed. And in fact, that one, when we got into it, the meetings and things, it was extremely stimulating. Absolutely. But I thought, Christ, man, this is so, it felt so cold, until I actually found somebody I could talk to eventually. But that was, please laugh, please do. But that was it. And I very soon just saw it for really what it is. And it's people there who are just there to be in the feeling of what it would be like to be in socialism, where people actually are talking about the real things, the important things. I could ramble on here, but I hope you took that all in the right way.
Yeah, I can relate to that, actually, Janet. I remember when I first was going around meeting people in different branches, and it was mostly men, I found that I had the same thing, that you know, nobody said hello, nobody came and talked to me or asked me anything, even asked who I was or introduced themselves. I found the men very, on the whole, very socially awkward. If anybody was likely to come forward and introduce themselves and get into a chat, it was going to be the women. So I don't know if that says anything.
That was indeed my experience too. It's a general unfriendliness. I don't know whether it's to do with being a woman or just being a new person. But I don't think the party has, well, it appears that some social skills are a bit lacking, I think.
Hey, hi, it's Joy here. We were just talking about this at lunchtime, Howard and I, and I said, just off the top of my head, it just sort of came to me. I said, well, you know, I joined the party and I was just sort of faced with a wall of unfriendly old men.
Yes, I remember. I initially thought, oh, maybe they're just shy. But actually, later I found out that some of them were just actually unfriendly.
It is exactly what I thought, I'm afraid.
Yeah, so I joined the party, oh my goodness me, so I'm 48 now, so it's, whoa, I don't know. 15 years ago, something like that. And I had the same experience, I have to say. Although I found that once I started talking to party members, that I've made the initial first sort of movement to talk to people. They were sort of very easy to talk to, but that was if there was a topic around socialism to talk about. I don't know. And sometimes I think that the party can come across as being very academic, and that can be quite intimidating. But I think it's really interesting at conference and ADM, because you'll find a different type of party member often in the kitchen than you will downstairs around the table. So I find that it's really pleasant to spend quite a lot of time in the kitchen talking to people where it's less formalised. That's it.
I think that was Lorna. Hi. I think there was evidence of that when Howard and I went to the one day meeting that we had in London. Was it earlier this year in January? I think maybe it was. And Carla, I'm going to single her out, poor thing, but provided with her sister, I think, a fantastic spread at one point. And really, everybody had a really nice time. You know, we were in the kitchen, we were eating food, and everybody was chatting away about stuff, not necessarily party business. You know, just having a chat, and I think you're right, it was the kitchen's conducive to more socialising, possibly.
I mean, I think maybe we should do more social things, really, you know. And I mean, we did Yale in Lancaster, and a lot of people enjoyed that. I can't remember the numbers. There was a few women, you know, and there was Mandy, and there was Sibylla, and a few women. And I mean, I think that's what encouraged people to join in the 80s was the social side of things. And I think we're sadly lacking that, apart from maybe Birmingham or whatever. But branches should think about more social things, really, you know, to encourage sort of human contact. as long as people are friendly, really, you know.
I agree with that, Dougie. Let's bring the social back into socialism.
Yeah, I'd just like to agree with all the other people that say it. I think that you're right. It's the lack of contact or the social awkwardness of going to a party meeting, particularly a formal meeting, that's quite off-putting sometimes. If I think about all the other things that I go to groups of, which are actually largely female dominated, except for a computer technology group, which is mostly men. And I just wonder what they've got in common compared with the other activities I take part in. I think it's that they're, in fact, less practical. They're more intellectual activities. And where people aren't actually doing things. So maybe it's easier to relate to things, or maybe it's easier for a lot of women to relate to just activities you can actually participate in actively.
Yeah, maybe there's something about that. That's a good point, actually, that I think, don't know how else to put it, but there are quite a lot of nerds in the party, you know, in the sense of quite academically minded, maybe quite introverted, generally socially awkward, not good at mixing, not good at making other people feel welcome. The only type of people that are attracted to a group of nerds is more nerds. And this is possibly this disparity is self-perpetuating. But I'm quite encouraged by what people are saying, because from the sound of it, we don't need to sort of go heavy on positive discrimination as such, which makes some people feel uncomfortable. We just need to think about how to make the party more sociable, and that would really do the trick. Because that sounds like what people are saying.
Some of you may remember a party member called Alison Waters. She got to know quite a bit about the party through me. And so she went along to what was then Camden Branch and said that she'd like to join the party. And they said, well, does it have to be tonight? And I think that was a good indication that they were more interested in talking to one another than they were to a potential new member for the party. I mean, I agree with all the things that people have been saying. It's absolutely vital to present a friendly and human face to people when they come into contact with the party. And in one respect, that's got harder, I think, because, you know, as Howard noted, most applicants for the party come through online now. So somehow it's, you know, we've got to present that friendly, welcoming face on the computer screen. And I think it would be worthwhile thinking about how we can do that, how we can improve the way the party looks when people go online and find out about it. One thought I would just lob in is humour. Get some humour onto the website. That is just a brilliant way of getting people's attention.
Speaking from the old person's home,
that's not mine, I hope.
And I think Keith's absolutely right, by the way. I mean, I remember the party when I first joined in the 70s. It was actually far more hostile being than it is now. You went to conference and if you dare to get up and say something, you expected to be slapped down. That was a sort of, that was a common experience. So I don't think we've sort of got worse in respect of being welcoming and sociable and so on. If anything, I think we've got better. So I'm not sure if that's a, I mean, it's a good thing to, obviously, for us to adopt that approach. And, yeah, more difficult, as Keith says, because people tend to approach it initially online. Even so, you know, they can be responded to in a way that's, you know, appealing and so on. And, you know, the membership applications committee tries to do that. But I'm not sure if the party's got worse, you know, rather than better in that respect. As was it Paddy said, it to a certain extent depends on the individuals you come into contact with.
I mean, I know this discussion is about how best to encourage more women into the party, and they, fair enough, they are 50% of the population. But following on from the Black Lives Matter talk, we don't attract ethnic minorities either.
Yeah, I suspect it's the sort of perceived homogeneity of the party. You know, it's one type of worker, which is male, white, middle-aged. People coming along to the party see that and just feel that they wouldn't fit in. But it can't just be that because, as Howard already pointed out, we're not getting the applications in the first place. At least as far as women are concerned, we don't really even... We have even less idea probably where ethnic groups are concerned, but people just aren't coming in the first place. So the answer has to be the initial impression that we're giving, presumably through the websites that Keith says we should have humour on, although some party members' attempts at humour I think are best avoided, and in our literature as well. So those are the first points of contact that somehow we're failing at those at that level.
It was interesting that Howard was saying that basically he wasn't sure of the gender disparity because he kept only surnames. And I found that interesting because it kind of tied up with the fact that it was Josh, wasn't it, on our FET committee, Paddy, was suggested to by a woman that when she went into the website, all the contacts for the various branches were all male. And so we actually were thinking, well, perhaps it is better then to only put initials, because if the woman is thinking about looking at the website and seeing all these male men's names, I mean, that can be a bit off-putting. So we've kind of already had the idea that perhaps the contacts especially should go on as initial only, so you're actually not sure whether it's a male or female. I don't know whether the rest of us think that's a good idea here.
Well, we did actually put that to the EC in the report. The EC actually rejected that idea on the interesting grounds that if you only put initials, that would be perceived as even more unfriendly. So, we lost that one.
I guess that's a pretty good point.
Yeah, I mean, initials do come across as the impersonal. I mean, in the old days, in the old standards, nobody ever used their full names. It was always, you know, H or ALB or DS or et cetera. This was to do with the party's sort of stance that it wasn't the individual that counted, it was the ideas, et cetera, et cetera. I'm glad that we've sort of moved away from that now. Most people tend to use, if not their full name, at least their first name when they sign an article. But that's better, I think. I'm not sure if, you know, when people look at all the sort of contacts, I don't know whether it registers with that many people that they're all men, because what you're going to look at mainly is the contact in your own area. if it happens to be a man, well, there's a 50% chance anyway. But I'm not sure whether that's particularly important.
I think if I see initials with a name, I assume it's a man anyway, because I think that men are much more likely to do that in lots of circumstances.
Here's just a thought struck me. It's about, okay, we're Alan and Janet, and I'm just wondering about the party members. How many party members, how many of them is their partner member as well? Are there any idea about that? It's just a fleeting thought, but whether it's significant or not, I have no idea. It would be interesting to know.
I think it would be a slightly invidious piece of research to do that. There definitely are a few, though, there's no doubt about it. I think there's an overwhelming number, but there are a few.
I think it would be an interesting piece of research, because I do think there's something in that. That just through my observations, really.
So I was wondering, because I just wonder how it would be living with somebody who was totally opposed to what you were part of, or B, interested in what you were part of. I don't know. Those sort of things would have some bearing, I think. Well, I think it would be for me. I think it definitely would be for me. If my partner was either totally disinterested or in opposition that much, okay?
And I have to say as well, having been in two relationships with people in the party and then having been in relationships with people who aren't in the party is somehow certainly less easy and less of a priority to be involved with the party, because you've got other things going on in your life with that partner. That it's nice to be able to do something with somebody, I think. And I wonder actually, although it's a difficult thing to say, I wonder how many women have left the party when they've split up with a partner who is a party member, and how many men have continued to be in there, because politics is more of a male domain.
I don't know if any of us remember the Emma Goldman film, but in that there was a little bit which said that the women that came to join the anarchists joined the party and basically left and took the men with them. They were basically just looking for husbands.
Well, that's the way forward for the party, set up as a dating agency.
Oh, that's quite funny.
Yeah, well, just said that. That's a good one, Keith. Very good one.
No, I said it's just like you wouldn't want to look for party partners.
But it is definitely the case that you do get the phenomenon. I can think of several of couples who were in the party. And when they split up, the woman sort of fades away, as it were, drops out. Don't know, can't think of examples of the other way around, but may well have happened, yeah. So I think, it's somehow more likely to happen the first way. It's the female member of the unit that disappears.
Yeah, I think that's
a general reflection of life in general, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's an occupational hazard of going co-ed. How about a speculative question? Just let me try this on you. It's just occurred to me to ask. What do you think, or how do you think that the party might be different if it was 50-50? Do you think it would make any difference?
I think it would make a huge difference socially. I'm just kind of almost hard to describe, but I'm just imagining it. And I think there'll be a lot more conversation, a lot more kitchen, a lot more, not saying that women belong in the kitchen, but I think there'd be a lot more sort of kitchen talk. And I think having more women would bring a lot to the party, a lot to the party itself, you know.
I think it would make a difference as well to women, especially, possibly to men too. But, I mean, you know, women walking into a room, into a meeting, and a lot of other women there, it would be something that they'd be much more likely to, I don't know, be attracted by, if you like. So, I think we, you know, we would be viewed differently by women if there were, you know, if we were a sort of 50-50 split.
As Paddy says, it's a speculative question. One thing that occurs to me is this. There have been periods in the party's history when there have been absolute convulsions of hostility between members, really ripping each other's heads off. And I can't remember an incident of that involving a female member, as far as I can recollect. All of those incidents have involved men being aggressive towards men. Now, if there are, here's my speculation, that if there were a lot more female members in the party, it might act as some inhibitor to that, and that might change the these awful convulsions that we've suffered from time to time.
What about other qualitative differences? I mean, perhaps in the way, the types of things that the party did, the way it organised. I mean, things about that.
I mean, I remember going to a few opponents' meetings, you know, SWP and RCP and things. And I was a lot younger then, right, you know. So you go to an RCP meeting, they usually send a woman over to talk to you, right, you know, to try and persuade you to join the RCP and then they find out you're a member of the Socialist Party, and then they criticise you. But there was that kind of thing that was used, you know, by certain parties, right, you know. Trying to attract members or whatever, you know, they would try and get a young man to talk to a woman or a woman to talk to a young man or whatever. So I mean, I don't know if we can do that, but I mean, it just seems a bit contrived, really, you know.
I think we're getting a bit close to Keith's suggestion here, aren't we? What date is it? Sorry to be flippant, but maybe you know the party's website at the top. There are various different tabs. There are various different tabs, join, literature, and so on. Maybe we should have one that says dating.
don't apologise for introducing some humour.
Joy's just suggested socialist babes. A woman who said that, by the way.
Socialist wives?
So we're only going to laugh here.
What wives? Sorry, I didn't get that. What wives?
Members' wives.
Oh, members' wives. I thought you said Stepford wives.
Well, that's slightly different.
Very, yeah. Just a bit. That's the whole thing, isn't it? It's obviously, if there were more women, we'd attract more women. The point, however, is how do we get more women without there being more women in the party? That's the difficult one, isn't it?
You're absolutely right, Colin.
But we did have them at an earlier time. We've talked about, you know, the 80s and so. We did have them. It's just a pity that's gone. And, you know, what are the factors that have made that go? It's hard to grasp that, really. I remember in the, it was in the 80s, I was on pamphlets committee with two other people, one, the long lamented Ron Kirk, and a female member of the party who's still in the party. I won't name her, but she's still in the party, and, you know, has been a very active member over the years. And you know, she'd been in the party since time immemorial, really. And I remember we were discussing the idea of a new pamphlet on women. And in fact, the party did produce a pamphlet on women at the time, which was very good, I think, and still is, called Women and Socialism. But I remember saying that the only material we've got on women, really, in our literature is a chapter on in Questions of the Day. You know, the old pamphlet, some of us will remember it anyway, called Questions of the Day. And I said the trouble with that chapter is that it shows every sign of having been written by a man, which the female member on the three of us on the committee piped up and said, I wrote it. Very one of the most embarrassing moments of my life, I think. Really didn't know where to put myself. But this is just a way of saying that, you know, it's not as though at the time we had a sort of, you know, the party had a more obviously sort of attractive approach to women than we do now. You know, if anything, I'd say at the time, some of the attitudes which I think Paddy has talked about that we've seen from some of the older members recently was fairly prevalent then, and even from some of the women, unfortunately.
What we've not touched on at all is the question of feminism. Now, my recollection was that in the 80s there were quite a few rows about feminism, and certainly some women left over feminist issues. If we had a party of 50-50, would these kind of arguments return? We don't seem to have resolved it. There's a question, there's a motion coming up at conference to reverse a previous motion that you can be a feminist and a socialist. There's a motion to reverse that, which will send out a completely different message to women. So what do we think about that subject?
Well, if we don't resolve that, then we're not likely to attract women, are we? I mean, it stands to reason that if those women have left over those issues, then we're not going to attract women because they'll only leave again over those issues, I'm assuming.
Yes, I would entirely agree with what you just said, Sarah.
Curious thing though was the what Howard calls the golden age of women in the party was during the 1980s, but then this was in spite of a conference resolution from 1974 that membership of a women's liberation organization was incompatible with membership of the party. And this wasn't overturned until 1992 or somewhere around then. So the women in the party were there in spite of that resolution.
They were trying to change things.
I remember being down in London and somebody had some old photographs. I think they were about the 80s or 90s or whatever. And there was a woman who had written on her photograph, not feminist enough for me, or, you know, I'll find somewhere else. And that was on the back of one of the photographs or whatever. So I think it's always been a concern by a lot of women that we don't pay attention to some feminist things, really, you know.
I think a lot of what the party does and publishes and talks about, maybe they're things that don't necessarily really relate to women and women's lives. I think perhaps we should think about publishing stuff and talking about things which have a real relevance to women. I think someone mentioned earlier that it all seemed a bit intellectual, and I think it's Lorna actually, and a bit intimidating. And I think it can be with a lot of stuff that is written and talked about. And I think perhaps we could make it at least a bit more human and a bit more about our daily lives and what all of us face in our daily lives, but also that maybe issues that are, say, more relevant to women. I don't know, about the family, about children, about education. I don't know. Certainly, I don't think women find a lot of Socialist Party stuff terribly relevant.
It's true that most of the party's writers, men, arguably. it would be more challenging, well, I don't know, more problematic for them to write articles about women, or they could do it obviously, but you know, women might not like it. So what, I suppose what we really need is more female writers, more women to produce the kind of thing that the party, this pamphlet the party produced in the 80s on women and socialism. Still very, you know, would need updating now, obviously, but, you know, still very much worth, something that is worth the party having, and it was a very good read at the time, and would still be now.
It's kind of chicken and egg, isn't it, really, with the writing question. I mean, if you look at the number of writers there are in the party, male writers in the party, it's probably no more than, at most, 10% of the membership. And so if you apply the same ratio to the women in the party, then you're talking about 10% of 10%. So you're talking about, you know, one or two. So we can't very well go to all the women and say, look, you need to be writing more articles. You know, most women don't write articles, the same as most men don't write articles.
I remember, you know, people praising the Heather Ball pamphlet, you know, that came out quite a few years ago. Was written by a woman, and it was about her life and things, you know, and it was more personal and more from a woman's point of view, right, you know. So we can do it with more articles like that or more pamphlets like that. Right, yeah.
I was just going to say, I agree with Dougie. I think it's the only party pamphlet I've read more than once.
Yeah, I was going to say I agree with Dougie as well. I think it's the Heather Hall articles are just the perfect example of what Carla was suggesting we needed. And I mean, it would just be great if there was somebody who could write those articles. Now, just simply talking about everyday life and rooting socialist ideas in their context, it's really, really invaluable.
Yeah, I remember something that Darren said in his talk about the Heather Ball articles. When he first came across them, his first thought was, what the hell is this? In other words, what's this doing in the Standard? And so he's very, very honest about it. And then he said after a while he'd read a few of them, he sort of got it. He got it. And then he said, I'm an idiot. Because, of course, he saw the point of them. But not at first. And there is something about us, the way that we operate, the way that the sort of literature that we put out, where we're just not getting it. And, you know, Heather was a one-off. I think you can't write like that on purpose. You have to be that sort of person. We just don't have those people. Or maybe we do, and we're just not trying hard enough.
Well, there won't be another Heather Ball, but then we don't want another Heather Ball. That's done, and that she was of her time. But, you know, it would be nice if we had another woman of this time, our time, her, you know, that would be good.
Well, I think in the meantime, we have to say to the male writers of the Standard, well, you know, you're all we've got at the moment. You know, have a think about it. Can you try and come up with something a bit more female oriented?
Well, it might be a good idea not to describe it as female orientated, but just as being whatever, if we could identify the characteristics that we want, to say, you know, more practical, more relating to everyday life, that sort of thing. Less academic. It might go down better.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because immediately you start trading in stereotypes, like, you know, we don't want to go down the road of saying, oh, well, women aren't academic, therefore we don't want to do that kind of article.
I feel rather uncomfortable about this discussion at the moment. I always feel myself as a person. I have some difficulties with feminism. It makes me feel uncomfortable because I may agree with some of the things, but I don't agree with all of the things. And at the root of it, for me, I always think of people. It shouldn't matter. You see, as far as articles for Standard or brochures or whatever, could say, well, we'd like some stuff from young people, we'd like some stuff from black people, we'd like some, you know, from all different kinds instead of just white male mostly. Not going to get them if whoever's reading us don't see that what they're reading is what they're looking for. Now, that's a whole different question, isn't it? Because we're going to write what we write and hope someone agrees with what we're writing, hope that someone sees the point that we're making, our political point, which is actually we are there for everybody. Which, in reading a lot of other media, it's obvious that it's not for everybody. But if we can't do that, if we aren't appealing in whatever way it is, I'm not suggesting that we should try and write stuff that is pointedly towards whether it's women or black people or young people. That's really not quite it. It has to come from what you actually believe in, what turns you on, if you like. Sorry, I don't have much positive to say. That's it.
No, that's positive, Janet. That's a perfectly valid and acceptable point of view as far as I'm concerned anyway.
Yes, thank you.
And I think when we're talking about writing, not looking at the issue of women in particular, but I just think about when I talk to my friends about politics, and people I've been in relationships with have found it very, very intimidating, because they've said, oh, politics isn't for me. I don't understand it. I don't know what it's about. Now, I know that we as a party, like, break that down to an extent, but I don't think we do it enough.
Now, what do you mean about breaking it down? Could you explain a bit more?
I guess I just feel that politics generally people don't find very approachable, that they are often put off by them. And I definitely think there's a lot to be said about putting the social back in socialism would make it a lot more approachable to people generally. I don't think that the party does anything. I mean, I know that we make our case very clearly, but I just think there's still something austere and unfriendly about the way that we're presented. I'm not quite sure how to get over that, other than I don't know really. I just think there is generally a big problem with politics. I mean, I work with a lot of very strong women who have a lot of very strong ideas, but yet still the notion of discussing politics, even they do it all the time without actually realizing that they're talking about politics, is something that would really put them off. So, you know, in terms of like trying to encourage people to come to meetings, that's really hard.
Yeah, I think sometimes politics, well, they say that politics and religion are kind of socially taboo, aren't they, really? You don't talk about religion and you don't talk about politics when you're in a social situation. Weird.
And extremely boring.
Yes, and yet people do talk about politics. They just don't realise it.
Of course, Lorna, and you have to, when they say, oh, I'm not interested in politics or, you know, let's not get political. I mean, my retort to that is everything is political. Life is political. So it's, you know, they kind of put it into some kind of box somewhere else. And, you know, and not really, it doesn't, and they don't think it kind of refers to everything, basically everything they do.
Absolutely. And isn't that where the term personal is political, sort of old feminist kind of slogan, you know, we used to use a lot?
There's obviously quite a big mismatch, isn't there, between how we appear to people in our literature and, you know, printed material and website, and how we actually are as people in social situations, notwithstanding what we've said about socially awkward individuals and nerds. But generally, when there's a bunch of party members getting together, they're a pretty sociable bunch, and we're all we're all quite keen to organise social events. And when the virus is over, you know, this whole business is finally got out of the way, we'll return to being sociable, hopefully. More so than ever, I would guess, if certain business type meetings could be done online, we could devote more attention to physical social meetings. I wonder if that mismatch between how we look and how we actually are is something to do with our kind of collective desire to look respectable and serious, so that we're taken seriously by the working class as a serious political force. I sometimes get that impression from the social standard that we've got this kind of unspoken rule that we've got to be respectable. And that's actually what we think of as our public image. It may be the very thing that's putting people off in the ways that have been described. So maybe we should just stop worrying so much about what people think of us and concentrate on projecting the image of a good, fun organisation.
I think you're right, Paddy. It's, you know, we're all different, and it's got to come from us as it comes from us. We here believe in the same thing. We're after the same goal, and we have to do it whichever way we can. I think that's what it comes down to. And we'll all do it in slightly different style or whatever. I'll keep on keeping on.